Sports is more than just wins and losses, the box score, and who's in first place. Sports is business. And for the next hour, that's our focus. This is The Boardroom, presented by the Cognizant Classic in the Palm Beaches on ESPN 106.3. Alongside the sports professor Rick Haro, here's Ken LaVica.
The end of an era in Palm Beach County sports as one of its all-time legends is leaving for another job. Also, sports betting, some controversy really starting to rear its ugly head throughout college sports and now in pro sports. That and a whole lot more, including a discussion that Rick Haro had prior to the passing of Senator John McCain, Arizona front and center with the Final Four and the national championship game next week. We got a lot going. It is the only sports business radio show in the state of Florida, Boardroom, presented by the Cognizant Classic in the Palm Beaches. Rick Haro, he is the sports professor. You hear him all over nationally syndicated radio, see him on national television, read his book, The Sports Business Handbook, wherever books are sold, and mascotbooks.com. And every Wednesday night, he joins me here on the Boardroom, presented by the Cognizant Classic in the Palm Beaches. Rick Haro, you are a busy man as always, and I did want to start with this. In the grand scheme of things, when we look back, all things considered, college basketball was a mere blip on the radar in Palm Beach County and in the Treasure Coast prior to Dusty May. Bringing FAU with the minimal resources that it has more than it had when Dusty got here, but going to the Final Four with that, back-to-back NCAA tournaments, in the grand scheme of things, 10 years from now, we'll be saying what about the impact of Dusty May in this area?
Howard Schnellenberger revisited.
Yeah.
Even more, yeah. However, because this is one of those deals where Howard took them to credibility. This guy took them to the Final Four. And when you think about the legacy that he left, you can't begrudge him the Michigan job. That's the way the business works. But you can look back at the legacy and you can realize that some of it was inevitable, and the athletic directors around the country guard against the coaching carousel by the buyouts and the contracts, and it's a function of leverage at the time. And ironically, he became more valuable, and he became more valuable as a school asset the more he won. And when you think about it, it established a franchise in a media market that has distinguished itself from the rest of South Florida. It's ironic, again, that he shared the spotlight with the University of Miami last year at the Final Four, yet he goes to the tournament again, and Miami doesn't.
Yeah. I mean, there's no doubt that Dusty May is one of the most impactful sports personalities. I love the Howard Schnellenberger comparison. I mean, you and I were doing this show when Lane Kiffin was still at FAU, and he's a household name, and he's gone on to Ole Miss, and he's going to be a national championship contender this year. But knowing what you know about business and branding and marketing, there's no doubt that Dusty May ended up being way more significant than Lane Kiffin at Florida Atlantic, right?
Well, yeah, I think so, and because I do think that the team didn't fundamentally make the big leap with Lane Kiffin. I mean, Lane Kiffin did establish a standard that was higher than the previous standards, but yet it wasn't the national spotlight kind of standard. And when you think of the economics and what could happen, and ultimately if FAU does do a new arena down the road, it's not the house that Dusty May built, but it's the house that Dusty built, they built, created a foundation that then created an arena. So it's a series of stepping stones that he was a very important part of.
Rick Haro, the sports professor. I'm Ken LaVica. This is the Boardroom, presented by the Cognizant Classic in the Palm Beaches. We're a part of the show that we call the opening bell, 15 and 15, 15 biggest sports business stories of the week, and Rick breaks them down in 15 minutes time. That comes up in a little bit, and then we bring back an interview that Rick did several years ago with the late John McCain, a big sports fan, and Arizona, his home state, will be a huge focus next week when the Final Four and college basketball's final couple of games roll in to the desert. betting, sports betting, there was obviously going to be, as this became more prominent in this country, some hiccups when it comes to athletes dabbling in sports betting. You have the Shohei Ohtani saga, and I know that we're going to talk about that in the 15 and 15. You also have Porter with the Raptors, who apparently was in business for himself with different props that he was hitting and making himself a very lucrative entity. You have the Temple basketball team investigated for point shaving. The way some are putting it, we're in a mortal crisis right now. Sports are crumbling around the throne of sports betting. I tend to think that it's a little bit of an overreaction, that things will level off. And I think with sports betting, it makes it easier to find those instances taking place. What do you make of the last couple of weeks here?
As reluctant as I am to say this, I completely agree with you. And, you know, the bottom line of all of this is that everybody's jumping to conclusions. After the Supreme Court basically legalized gambling state by state, we passed the Rubicon after North Carolina started its gambling issues early this year, that more of the U.S. population now lives in gambling-permitted states than not. So we have had a full industry growing before our eyes, FanDuel, DraftKings, ESPN Bet, all of the sponsorship. And when you put it in this context, I'm not excusing it, but this is one of those situations where there are a relatively small number of world is falling apart problems. And, you know, this Raptor kid is going to have the book thrown at him, and probably does and should. Ohtani, I want to reserve judgment, as we all should, until the facts come out. And when there are other incidents, even when it rises to the basketball team like Temple, they get the penalties, the intense monitoring continues, the budgets to preserve the integrity of the sports continue to increase, and that's the way it ought to be treated, not revisiting whether gambling ought to happen in our society or not.
You look at some of the TV ratings here, the NCAA tournament, its opening weekend, some of the best TV ratings it's ever had across all of the Turner platforms. And then I could not believe this. Nearly 5 million viewers for a second round matchup between Iowa and West Virginia, the Caitlin Clark effect. But these women's basketball NCAA tournament ratings are through the roof right now. I thought that the transfer portal and the NIL was supposed to kill off college basketball especially, and here we go. I don't think it's ever been a more watchable, stronger entity than it is right now.
First of all, the 5 million, I don't know what the hell everybody else was doing that didn't watch that.
Yeah.
It was classic television. Yeah, you and me both. And by the way, the men's tournament is lucky that their Saturday afternoon and Thursday and Friday night evening games don't impede with Caitlin Clark, LSU, all of those giants. I know that there is a quadrant of death where the Elite Eight may go a long way toward deciding the national championship. But when you look at the, and we'll talk about this in our 15 to watch, the Indiana Fever with high ticket requests because that's the presumptive first-round draft pick of Caitlin Clark, the WNBA looking at a new separate TV deal that they're negotiating. All of this means that women's basketball is absolutely more fun to watch. I don't care what anybody says, but if I had a choice of a Caitlin Clark game or any game except FAU, Miami, maybe Northwestern, and of course Duke and North Carolina, hands down, women's game.
I mean, Iowa struggling with West Virginia, LSU struggling with Middle Tennessee State. That's as good a drama as you're getting anywhere in the first two rounds right there. There's a tension to it because there's so much pressure. There's so many eyeballs. I mean, it is just damn good television. When we come back, Shohei Ohtani, do we know anything further? Or did he make things more cloudy for himself? Also, Rick Haro and his interview with John McCain. We have a lot to do before we hit 7 o'clock Eastern time. That's Rick Haro, the sports professor. He's the expert. I'm Ken Lavica. I'm just sort of at the steering wheel. This is The Boardroom, presented by the Cognizant Classic in the Palm Beaches, right here on ESPN 106.3. Shohei Ohtani, what is next as Major League Baseball tries to sift through a mess with some gambling implications. This is the Boardroom presented by the Cognizant Classic in the Palm Beaches right here on ESPN 106.3. We do it every Wednesday at 6 o'clock. The we being Rick Harrow, the sports professor, and me, Ken Lavica. Rick, let's not waste any time. Let's get into number one. Shohei Ohtani addressed the gambling speculation. His now disgraced assistant. I don't know if we learned anything, though.
No, this special new detailed report by ESPN that said the Ohtani name is on the wire transfer. That doesn't mean anything yet. Like mean a lot, but the agent can authorize it in somebody's name, and a wire transferor only cares basically that you represent that you've got the guy that has the money and that the guy has the money. So that doesn't mean anything. Doesn't mean the guy knows what's going on. And so the story change is a little problematic, but as a lawyer, I will tell you, pump the brakes. But the fact that the FBI is investigating, as well as the Dodgers in baseball, if there is a shred of evidence, given the zero tolerance policy, this is going to be the hardest decision Commissioner Rob Manfred has ever made in his tenure, no matter what he says.
Yep, no doubt about it. Let's head to number two. Clemson has joined FSU in going to legal war with the ACC.
$140 million exit fee under the grant of rights situation. They're also suing, saying it is not appropriate for us to not be able to pick and choose teams that we're going to be playing way down the road up until and beyond 2036. Clemson's lawsuit is not as aggressive and hostile as FSU's. The FSU one claimed negligence. However, no matter what happens here, this is a conference being challenged at its very root governing structure. And if this does get to a jury, or if it does get settled favorably to the school, may change the school conference relationships in all contexts for all time. For all time, maybe even longer.
That would count as eternity, I suppose. Number three here in the 15-15, another sign of the strength of college basketball. The NBA says we're getting rid of our G League team that was supposed to be the alternative, the Lansing Ignite.
Yeah, they were 2-28. So, I mean, they want to put them out of their misery, kind of like euthanasia. But most important is that the top draft picks who were picked, like Scoot Henderson and Mathis Marcellus, Ron Holland, and all those kids were drafted and then relegated to the G League to develop. Why would a kid that has NIL significant earning potential go through that process like that again? And that's the ultimate problem, that the G League remains unattractive as long as college basketball players can make as much money as they obviously can.
Yep, and that's what's saving college basketball. And here's the evidence. Number four, CBS TNT viewership records. Most watched men's NCAA tournament through Saturday ever.
And we're going to continue to see some amazing box office games Thursday, Friday through this weekend. We don't guarantee Cinderella. There are not more than one Cinderella, not even one Cinderella.
No.
If you consider NC State being one of those long-term traditional powers, even though they're seated 11th. So we've traded Cinderella for big-time college programs going against each other, and the ratings will continue to increase.
Let's go to number five, WNBA. They're looking at independent media rights because of the rising popularity of women's hoops.
You put Cinderella on Words with Friends or Scramble, that's an 80-point word.
Absolutely.
Guys, you listen and you react. Yeah. All right. Next, number five, as you said, $80 to $100 million. The NBA, WNBA is shooting for it. They're looking at the record-setting $240 million media rights deal secured by the NWSL with ESPN, CBS, Amazon, and Scripps. And with the popularity of Caitlin Clark, et cetera, the WNBA is saying, we may decide to go out on our own, which is only good for women's sports and clearly the WNBA.
Let's head to number six. What a boon for Nike. Goodbye, Adidas. German football going to Nike, a 100 million euro deal.
Adidas invented Germany. Well, no, not that, but it's pretty darn close. the Nike value of 100 million euros with a partnership that spanned over 70 years. Nike now takes it from 2027 to 2034. And it's not just those few years. It's the fact that they're unraveling a legacy deal. They've also, Federation, announced a new deal with TikTok, regardless of what our situation is with TikTok here in the States. There is a big TikTok sponsorship deal all across the planet, and it's affecting German soccer and everybody else.
Let's head to number seven. There's some international flavor on the women's side of the NCAA tournament. 16% of women's players are from outside America.
More than 800 players in Division I women's basketball with a non-U.S. residence listed as their hometown. 144 players out of Spain. Australia leads the way with 15% of March Madness tournament players. 42 countries beyond the U.S. will be represented among the 68 tournament teams have been represented that way. Jazz Shelley, the native of Australia, Nebraska sharpshooter, and more. And the more, again, international support of women's basketball, better for the sport.
Let's go to number eight. You alluded to it earlier. Future Indiana Fever ticket prices are already starting to reflect the fact that Caitlin Clark could very well be going to Indiana.
Well, they won in 2012 with Tamika Catchings, but then they let the L.A. Sparks and Minnesota Lynx and Vegas Aces and others teams capture the day. Guarantee you, with Caitlin Clark, equities will change. Vivid Seats already points out a doubling or tripling of ticket prices, and she obviously hasn't even been drafted yet.
Something I know a little bit about, number nine, what it's like to be a Cinderella in March. Last year it was FAU, but of course over time, schools like Florida Gulf Coast, Oakland this year, George Mason, VCU, they all know the economic impact and the branding impact of a deep tourney run.
Another context of yours that you know well is coming from nowhere.
Yeah.
And here's the bottom line of what this means. For example, commitments from donors rose from 450 grand to 2 million when St. Peter's beat Kentucky. George Mason received more than 600 million worth of donations over time. The Fairleigh Dickinson upset of Purdue meant, among other things, a Yes Network deal on a new locker room. Oakland's athletic department spent $15 million, about one-tenth of Kentucky's expenses last year, but you wouldn't know it on the court. And so, obviously, this is important, not only for the big schools, but for the Cinderella as well.
I really like Cinderella an awful lot, to be quite honest. I think you were definitely onto something.
You'd hear it. You're going to hear it more.
we're gonna bring it as part of the American lexicon. We're ushering in a new era. Number 10, the economics of being an NBA fan laid out from team to team.
Yeah, the average cost of $159. The Memphis Grizzlies are the most economical down there with New Orleans, Atlanta, and a couple of other teams. On the other hand, the $335 per comparable amenity ticket, the Celtics, Warriors, and obviously New York Knicks. And so the tickets averaging $190, enjoying a game in New York City at what it'll cost you. Here's the bottom line, though. You better make sure that the game doesn't just depend on winning or losing, and it depends on affordable family entertainment. And if you don't, winning's fine, but when you lose, it's over.
Let's head to number 11, college basketball blue bloods. Is the NIL and the portal killing off the traditional powers?
Well, what it does is it lets the schools who are like Oakland's 40-year coach Greg Campy, engineering the biggest win in school history over Kentucky, the popular guys, the Cinderella, who decide that they want to move forward, they can grab two or three players. And what was yesterday's Cinderella is tomorrow's Cinderella. on steroids.
Oh, man. Every time you say it, I can just hear a cash register. This is glorious. Number 12. Speaking of cash registers, by the way, James Madison, $53 million in student fees to boost the athletic department.
Yeah, they've also gone through a deliberate strategy that went kind of in a different direction. They're spending more money on student fees. Some students who are not sports fans may not be impressed, but the front porch of a university is always the athletic department. Their limit was 70% student fees in their previous conference. Now it's 55%. But now it still means that they're moving forward. Sun Belt looked great in football, got a new facility, great in basketball, contributing facility. They've gone from a Cinderella that's mediocre to a Cinderella that has tremendous potential.
Cha-ching, cha-ching. My pockets already feel heavy. Number 13, NASCAR, new fans because of, well, Netflix. Sounds like F1. This one is full speed.
Yeah, and it's the same kind of concept, which is immediate high-level access combined with some sophisticated storytelling. You know, that's why Full Swing was great. That's why Drive to Survive for Formula One is great. That's why this one looks good. That's why Breakpoint, I think the name of it, tennis, is not going well.
Yeah.
Because you don't see Djokovic, you don't see Zverev stuff, but it all depends on access. And if you want to focus on your sport, get a network that's professional and get some storytelling.
Number 14, the UFL gets it. They're going to put their games on SiriusXM radio.
Well, the bottom line of all of this is that they've got a national platform. And obviously the XFL and the USFL, eight teams, Arlington, Birmingham, Detroit, Houston, San Antonio, Memphis, St. Louis, Washington, they named their broadcasters for USFL coverage. ESPN did, and the SiriusXM deal and Fox Sports Radio will start this Sunday, Saturday. I don't know what to expect. But there's a lot more stability than there was in the previous issues.
All I'll say is get used to the kickoffs you see in the UFL because it's coming to the NFL in the fall.
Yep.
And then finally, number 15, while we wring our hands about some isolated sports gambling crossovers with sports in this country, Aston Villa has just signed a mega shirt sponsor deal with a Greek sports book.
Well, and that's Wes Edens, who was partner with Mark Lazary on the Bucks, but he has international acumen, has a deal with Aston Villa, sealed the biggest church front sponsorship in the club's history. Greek online betting platform Betano, about 25 million annually for 2 years for next season. What it does is it's a bridge to more kit sponsorships with betting organizations year after year. And it may be in the future that you may have more betting kit sponsorships on the shirts of Cinderella in the future. No, I'm kidding. It won't happen, but I just wanted to get that word out there again.
No, it was good. It was good. It was good placement, and it caught me by surprise. That's when you know a word has made it. And that'll do it for the 15 and 15 here on the Boardroom, presented by the Cognizant Classic in the Palm Beaches. And I'm glad you brought this back. We played this on the show several years ago when you first did it, but I thought it was very appropriate, Rick, that a week coming up where Glendale is going to be front and center, the impact of Arizona sports. A place you've spent a lot of time and really dug deep in to their sports acumen. Your sit down a couple of years ago with Senator John McCain, who really was a major driving force into making that area what it's become from a sports perspective. Your sit down with him, I thought, was very enlightening, and we're about to hear that again.
Thank you for acknowledging all of that. The interview was at a NASCAR race at Phoenix International Raceway years ago. His health was still stupendous. He left this earth on August 25th, 2018. But the celebration continues. 50 years ago, he was released from the Hanoi Hilton, and he started his incredible, unique career in sports and politics, more politics than sports. 25 years ago, about this fall, he was beaten by Barack Obama, but lost gracefully, which is kind of an interesting comment to make. And then, obviously, the senator from Arizona from 1987 to 2018, listen to his interview. I won't give it away, but listen to his interview about the impact of sports on the culture also what it meant to him as a prisoner to have sports involved in his daily life, not only celebrating the fact that he was the senator from the state that has the Final Four there in 10 days. If you guys feel like changing the dial, you better not. You better suck it up and listen.
Yep, and that's what comes up when we come back. Rick Carr with John McCain. Rick, by the time we speak next Wednesday, we're going to know who's in the Final Four on Saturday. We'll discuss that and a whole lot of other things. Who knows what's coming on next with Shohei Ohtani. We'll talk to you next week. Have a great rest of your week and weekend, okay?
Duke, North Carolina, Tennessee. I don't know the fourth yet.
All right. That's noted. It is written down. Duke, North Carolina, Tennessee. Perfect. When we come back, Rick Haro and John McCain. This is the Boardroom presented by the Cognizant Classic in the Palm Beaches right here on ESPN 106.3. Back in the only sports business radio show in the state of Florida, Boardroom presented by the Cognizant Classic in the Palm Beaches right here on ESPN 106.3. Before Rick Haro talks with the late U.S. Senator John McCain, which is appropriate with the Final Four coming up in Phoenix, Glendale, surrounding areas. Wanted to listen back to the extended interview I did with Dusty May, now Michigan head basketball coach, departing Florida Atlantic. This from earlier this week on Levick at Theo and Stone. This was the last interview that Dusty May did before he left for Ann Arbor and was introduced as the next boss at Michigan. Dusty May discussing a lot of really good insight, giving a lot of really good insight on the inner workings of the business of college basketball, including a meeting with Michigan, why it was time to leave Florida Atlantic, some of the maneuvering now behind the scenes when it comes to the FAU coaching job. Just really good insight into what a coaching transition is like in college basketball and what this means for FAU down the road. All of this relating directly to sports business. Here's just a portion of my conversation with now Michigan head coach, former FAU head basketball coach Dusty May from earlier this week here on Levick at Theo and Stone on ESPN 106.3. When we got on the plane last Wednesday to go to New York City and prepare for the NCAA tournament, did you know that you were, however long the NCAA tournament run was going to last for FAU, that you were embarking on your final games or game as the head coach at Florida Atlantic?
Absolutely not. The same thing happened last year, Ken, where the search firms reach out. They ask your interest. You tell them if you would be. You tell them your plans. And then they would ask, would you like us to wait on you? And the response was, that's up to you. I don't know if my mindset will change in a week or two. I'm not sure. But whatever you need to do for your position. And the same thing was happening this year. It just happened that several of these jobs were targeting me, and I had more options. But to be honest, Ken, I would tell my wife, I wish they would all just go in another direction so I wouldn't have to make a decision. And so then I start reading on Twitter that I'm going to this job and that job, and all of that was, I don't know if it's just for clicks or what, but it wasn't true. And so when I got back, it was like, okay, now we got to shift and make a decision. And I hadn't met with Michigan in person. And so I drove to Fort Lauderdale, met with a group that flew down, and decided after two, three, 4 hours that was the best thing for my family and my career. Obviously, selfishly, I made the best decision for me. But yeah, it was very difficult, and deep down, I wanted all of them to not go after me, so I would have a decision to make, and I could stay at FAU and continue building this and remain happy, because I know that I was happy here.
Why ultimately did you decide it was time for Dusty May to leave Florida Atlantic?
Well, Ken, there's a lot of layers to that. I did feel like that group, the last dance, seemed applicable, because that group had just kind of, I don't want to say changed, but they had grown a year. And so they all wanted a little bit more. So everyone was a little bit frustrated in their role. And because of all the tension we received and all the things that come with the modern athlete, modern program, we weren't quite as cohesive. Now, I would tell the guys this, that, you know, last year we were in the 100th percentile in team cohesiveness, and this year we were probably in the 95th percentile, which is still exceptional, but it wasn't the standard we set for ourselves. And so it just felt different, and at times even I felt like maybe this group, they've heard my voice too much. You know, just when things like that start happening, and as a coach, I'd been here 6 years, and sometimes just a different challenge or something new, it reinvigorates you. And, you know, Ann and I are about to be empty nesters, and so everything about our lives has changed, and we wanted a new challenge, and hopefully it's the right decision. You never know. It was very, very difficult. It's still difficult. You know, I've still introduced myself a couple times on the phone as FAU head, and then I have to catch myself as well, Ken. But, at no point did I ever think I'm out after the season. It was more of when the season's over, we'll evaluate whatever's in front of us and make a decision based on the information. And that's kind of how I do everything. Now, are there times when it creeps into your head when you're watching TV and whatever the case? Absolutely. We're human. But at no point was I preoccupied with chasing a job, because I didn't want to chase any and had no desire to even go through that process.
Do you recommend who might take over? Any input whatsoever here?
Obviously, I would have a preference to hiring from within. Brian's going to make the right decision for FAU and this basketball program, just like he's done for all the other sports. But I do think there's institutional knowledge of how it was built, and it wasn't me, Ken. It was so many of us, brick by brick, fan by fan, call by call. And so, obviously, I get a lot of the credit and whatnot because ultimately we made a lot of the right decisions and brought the right people in and whatnot. And obviously, you lead by example. But so many people contributed to this. And there's guys on our current staff. They're equipped to do the job. It's just a matter of it's the right time and right situation. You know, I've used the example of Gonzaga. Dan Munson leaves to go to Minnesota, and it never skips a beat. It keeps getting better and better, and it's still getting better and more consistent. And Dan Munson gets fired after 5 years at Minnesota, and then he's at Long Beach State nonetheless. And then you have the example of Wichita State, where they're Greg Marshall, they're in the Final Four, and then he leaves, and a couple years later, they're the 13th seed in the American Conference Tournament. You never know what happens next and what the next thing is. But, you know, it's those are the tough decisions that administrators and coaches and we have to make. But without a doubt, we do take great pride in leaving this place better than we found it. We worked with great, great people, and hopefully we represented FAU and helped with an identity and a model of something that's better than all of us as individuals. It's, you know, we did it with each other. We did it as a group. And ultimately, that's the thing this generation's missing, the feeling of great teamwork and partnership, because we've become so individualized as a society.
Do you feel like, while this was a perfect confluence of events that led us to this point, this program is now sustainable, or is there still some work to do?
Without a doubt, it's sustainable. It's prepared to move into the next chapter with a lot of built-in advantages. And like I said, an identity, and people recognize the name, they recognize the brand. And so there are a lot of things that make this place much more attractive than it was 2 years ago, 3 years ago, whatever the case. And the infrastructure, obviously, is improving daily. So it's a place that is going to continue to improve in all the sports. There's great coaches here. The facilities, there's a commitment to improving facilities. So I would be excited for the future of FAU. And I know when I come back on vacation or to sneak away, I'm confident I'll drive through FAU and just see continuous improvement.
To listen to the full interview, you can download it wherever you get your podcast, Levicka, Theo, and Stone, or you can watch it in its entirety on YouTube. Just subscribe to ESPN West Palm Play. Now here's Rick Haro and his visit with the late U.S. Senator John McCain. This was recorded several years ago, but definitely worth revisiting with the sporting region of Phoenix, Glendale, and in Arizona coming to the forefront here in just a week's time.
Out of the archives, the late Senator John McCain, senator from Arizona, 1987, to his death on August 25th, 2018. I was lucky enough to catch up with him on a extended interview opportunity before the NASCAR race in Phoenix about 7 years ago. His comments on sports, on business, and on life are certainly worthy of listening to. So listen up, John McCain. Broadly defined, sports entertainment as big business, there are federal policy implications, tax exemptions, remove them or not for facilities, public-private partnership, federal issues, relocation, a lot of specifics, but broadly defined, how do you view sports in this context?
Well, I view sports in this context, in the context of the Sherman Antitrust Act. In other words, they're able to have exclusive franchises in different locales in this country, and maybe even overseas over time. And that's understandable and reasonable. But that gives them a degree of immunity, but it also then does bring in the federal government into their business. Now, if they were not receiving the Sherman Antitrust Act protections and tax dollars to fund their expansions, their stadiums, etc., then I, as a United States Senator, would not be involved in any way. But when they take a taxpayers-funded facility and decide that they're going to black out the area because they haven't sold out the stadium, then that's when I step in and say, no, you're not going to deprive the people of your locality, which you have the exclusive right to, from seeing a game just because you didn't make enough money. And so that's been one of my my causes, and I'm sure it's made me very unpopular with some of the owners. In fact, I know it has been. But look, it is part of America. The Major League Sports is an integral part of America. I will never forget, as long as I live, years ago when I was in a Vietnamese prison camp and they got some new prisoners in, the first thing we wanted to know is who won the Super Bowl. That was the first question that we asked these new guys. So it is, but with that kind of role that professional sports plays, they also have some obligations.
And we've talked off camera about owners taking another step, Steve Ross and his initiative to end racism. It doesn't end it, but it certainly speaks to the obligations of owners, teams, leagues to be socially responsible in the broader context, correct?
And that's why it was so disturbing a couple of months ago when we found out that the Department of Defense was paying money for so-called patriotic events, honoring the men and women who were serving, flags, etc. And I want to make it clear, there's a difference between, for example, here at NASCAR, the National Guard sponsors a car, pays for it. That's fine. That's a recruiting tool. But that's far different from saying we're honoring all of our veterans at halftime and here's the flag and aren't we great, we the franchise, aren't we wonderful, we're honoring when they're actually getting money for it. That was a bit of a black eye, especially for the NFL.
Leagues clearly take you seriously. They've taken you seriously for a number of years, and so there will be some technical adjustments as a consequence of what you've done. But again, in the broader social context, there's no better way to show patriotism than attend a NASCAR or sporting event, I assume.
No, and NASCAR is especially good at that, particularly given the average, if you look at it, middle-income, patriotic American that loves NASCAR. And by the way, I think our major franchise owners do great things. They do a lot of wonderful things in the community. We see example after example of the outreach. outreach, of efforts to help address community issues, whether it be education or whether it be hospitals and places. And a lot of the athletes are wonderful, don't get me wrong. But from time to time, we have to make sure that they are doing the right thing.
And you certainly have the ability and experience and leverage to make sure they're doing the right thing. Let's segue.
Could I mention one other thing?
Go ahead.
I did receive a letter from the commissioner. This pay for patriotism is over. They will not allow that to happen again, and I'm very happy to know that.
And that took 3 hours, 5 hours after your press conference?
Not long.
Not long. There's the leverage comment. Let's segue into sports as economic development, if you don't mind. We're here at PIR, the Quicken Loans Heroes 500 happening. And the other issue of announcing a IndyCar race here. So there are three Super Bowl dimensioned economic impact weekends on a calendar year. In this context, you acknowledge and support the idea of sports as big business development.
Sports is not only big business. There's a certain prestige associated with having the four major professional sports here, franchises here. NASCAR, it isn't probably, we all agree that Daytona is probably the biggest NASCAR event, but PIR has become really very up there, and they're going to invest some quite a bit of money to upgrade the facility here. And this, we have the Super Bowl sometimes, we have college playoffs, we have all kinds of great things here. But you know what the number one in attendance is every year? PIR. And people, it was interesting driving in today, it sold out. There are people now scalping tickets. That shows the popularity that this sport has in this part of the country.
And nationally and internationally as well. So, and corporately, awareness from the kind of narrow perspective of the Valley, when you mention PIR, Avondale, Phoenix, thousands of times, it gets noticed by corporate world, but also by the world, the business world at large.
It gets recognized by the business world, but it's also, frankly, a source of pride for those of us that live in the Valley and in the state. It's nice to see the Arizona Cardinals, the Phoenix Coyotes, the Arizona Diamondbacks, and PIR is, in sheer numbers, that's bigger than any of those single events. So we're very pleased to have PIR here in the Valley. It's been here a long time, and there's commitments to upgrade the facility here too as well.
Speaking of facility upgrades, and we're not going to micromanage it, but the whole idea of the political and public-private aspect of this, mayors, political leaders always tell me that the easiest thing to understand but the hardest to quantify is the intangible spirit of bringing a team, having a team win, having a team succeed. How do you analyze that?
First of all, let me say, in full disclosure, I would not like to see a single dime of taxpayers' dollars used to build any of these facilities. I just, maybe a tax write-off, but it is what it is. They have the exclusive franchise and the area, and they can always move. That's their right to do so. So we see taxpayer-financed stadiums. What do you think is going to happen out in Los Angeles here? We know it's inevitable. There's going to be at least one NFL franchise out there. I don't like it, but it is what it is. And to counterbalance that, it's a great source of pride to me to be in a state which is not a very large state, where so many people come, where so many events are held because they love the venue. Now, the weather has something to do with that, but there's a lot of other places with good weather, and yet in Phoenix, we get much more than our share, whether it be in college playoffs or whether it be a number of the other NBA. We're going to have the college NCAA championship here in Phoenix as well. So I'm proud, and it gives our citizens a great sense of pride that it's happening here, even if your mother-in-law and comes to visit while that event is taking place.
Gives the mother-in-law something to do, and the person that's being visited something to do. Just one follow-up on that question, if you don't mind. The whole idea of public-private partnerships, you said maybe tax write-offs. We won't micromanage that either, but we know that there's been about $17 billion of public money spent over the last 20 years in a lot of different contexts. Infrastructure, for example, tax credits, increment dollars. So it's not an absolute prohibition. As you said, it is what it is. It's a technique. How do you do it?
I mean, if we're talking about, for example, the one thing we need in America right now is an upgrade of our highways, bridges, etc. And yet in the Congress, there's a little hope now we may have a highway bill. We lurch from year to year with extensions of the old bill. Look, if there's anything that's vital, and I think, to the economy of the state of Arizona, is an upgrade of our infrastructure. So I'm not only not opposed to it, I'm proud that General President Eisenhower put together the first highway system that has made America so benefited financially because of it. And the greatest thing that could happen in Arizona is a highway that goes from the Mexico-Arizona border all the way to Canada. That's my dream.
John McCain, the sports fan, obviously you go and watch as many different sporting events as you possibly can. So years from now, the plate is full with going to as many sporting events as are out there.
Yes, I am perhaps the classic mediocre high school and college athlete that engaged in all sports, so therefore has an incredible appreciation for those with the talents that excel at it. And some of my heroes, frankly, Larry Fitzgerald, Shane Doan, Paul Goldschmidt, we've had some really great athletes and nice guy athletes as well.
Since you've established your sports curriculum vitae and chops, and don't take this disrespectfully, just everybody wants to know what is John McCain doing 10 years from now?
John McCain is probably down at the old soldier's home waiting for someone to come and blow the cavalry charge so I can get into the fight again. My hero is Teddy Roosevelt, and Teddy Roosevelt gave a great speech one time called The Man in the Arena. I've loved being in the arena.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, thank you very much, and Senator McCain, thank you. And just one more parenthetical comment. We're here in a rain delay at the race today. You do have the ability to change the weather, like the reputation?
Actually, we are so glad when it rains around here. My predecessor, a guy named Barry Goldwater, once said that in Arizona we have so little water the trees chase the dogs. So we're grateful for any rain we ever get.
Thank you, sir. It was an honor. Thank you very much.
Well, John McCain passed almost 6 years ago, and you can guarantee one thing. As a statesman and as a deal maker, he understands and understood the value of sports in family, in life, and in bringing the fabric of our country together, something we have so badly needed. But he also understands something else. As I did the interview at the Phoenix International Raceway, proud of his state, proud of the sports heritage, proud of the Diamondbacks, proud of the Suns, hoping the Coyotes find a home, proud of the Cardinals. He knew and knows his sports. And we celebrate Final Four, the NCAAs, in Glendale, Arizona, almost as a tribute to John McCain, when you think about it. Well, that's our show for this week. We'd like to thank Callie Kazire for putting this all together. And most important, the family of the late Senator John McCain. What a compelling interview. Sports Professor Rick Haro, speak with you soon.